Scene the Teen, A New Start, written by Random Reader 13 and read by Kaber. This is a Mandalorian Batfam crossover fic, rated general audiences, in which no archive warnings apply. It features the relationship between Din and Bruce, Django and Jaster, and everyone and everyone. This is part 4 of Between the Stars. Chapter 1. Dick was sprawled out on his bunk, reading through the latest information Din had gathered about the time they'd found themselves in. They'd slowly been piecing together important information regarding politics and timelines, but it was taking a while, and the information was often scattered or irrelevant. It wasn't like they could just walk up to someone and ask for a quick summary of the past decades of galactic history. They were conspicuous enough in their armor. Though perhaps less conspicuous than in their own time, locals still did double takes at the sight of them. People still treated them with caution and respect, but bartenders and mercenaries were much more casual, giving them a nod instead of stopping their conversations to stare. It gave Dick hope that apparently their numbers grew strong enough that the need to hide was not so pressing. Dick frowned a little at one of Din's notes and scrolled back up, certain he had seen Batarine referenced in someone else's report. If the reports contradicted each other, they'd have to do further research to clarify what was true. Whispering made Dick pause in his search. He glanced up toward the empty doorway. The small, abandoned compound they discovered in the mountains of Takodana wasn't the most comfortable or conducive to privacy. The covert had been close quarters too, but at least there had been doors. But it was isolated and not on any map. They were used to the hard stone floors and the chill of being underground, but some people apparently had forgotten about how well sound traveled in the tunnel-like halls. It took only a few seconds for him to identify Tim and Jason's voices, and a pause in their whispering probably meant Cass was there too. Dick slowly put his data pad down and crept toward the door. His vote plotting together never voted well. "He'll get over it," Jason murmured, after a moment of silence where Cass presumably said something in hand language. "And really, he can't be mad," Tim added. He was using his most reasonable, "listen to me, I'm using logic" voice, which was a sure sign he was about to do something stupid. "We're Mando Ade. Learning how to use weapons is an important part of maintaining the creed." "Aranov," Jason agreed. "What happens if we need to defend ourselves and all that's available is Din's laser sword? Are we supposed to just give up?" Dick stiffened. They couldn't possibly be considering. "Those Dekuti. There was a reason Din kept the laser sword hooked to his belt, and there was a reason he hadn't trained them how to use it himself. He'd never shown such qualms with other weapons, so clearly he didn't want them touching it." "You guys cannot be serious," he hissed, stepping into the hallway. Tim and Jason jumped. Cass smiled and gave him a wave. "You knew he was there?" Jason demanded. Cass tilted her head, unimpressed. Cass always knew when people were around. "Why didn't you tell us?" Jason amended. "He's gonna criff it all up." "Hey," Dick protested. "Am I wrong?" Jason shot back. "Didn't you come out here to stop us?" Dick scowled, folding his arms. He had, but he wasn't about to admit that. "I already told Steph and Damien to meet us in the courtyard," Tim said, tapping on his vambrace. "Evident," Jason started, but Tim cut him off. "It's a disappearing message. There'll be no evidence I sent it." Dick put his hands on his hips. "How are you even going to get it?" "Buir is sleeping and Din's getting ready to give Grogu a bath, which we all know means he'll take off his armor and be distracted for at least an hour, Tim reported. That was true. Grogu really loved baths. They were a relatively rare occurrence. Due to a lack of time, space, and access to water, Grogu was usually stuck getting scrubbed with a wet cloth or put in the sonic, so none of the elite begrudged him his fun. Plus, as much as Din sighed about the production, everyone knew he loved watching Grogu splash around. Cass is going to sneak in and grab the laser sword. We'll have some test runs with it, and we'll put it back before he even notices, Tim concluded. Dick surveyed them all, noting the stubborn glint in their eyes, and sighed. I guess if you're going to do it anyway, there should be some adult supervision. Jason scoffed, Cass tilted her head judgmentally, and Tim rolled his eyes. Sure, Jason said. Keep telling yourself that. After a moment where Jason and Dick just scowled at each other, Cass rolled her eyes. The head movement they used to convey the expression through their bouche made the unhelmeted version very dramatic, and sent them a quick wave before gliding down the hall, feet unfairly silent on the echoing stone. The rest of them headed in the opposite direction, taking the longer way around the half-circle of tunnels so they wouldn't pass by Din's door and risk getting his attention while Cass was in the middle of her infiltration. That meant, of course, they had to sneak past Bruce's room instead, but Bruce was a little bit of a heavier sleeper than Din, and they made it to the courtyard without any trouble. Dick unhooked his bouche from his belt and pulled it on before hauling the door open. The doors on either side of the tunnels were the only ones in the compound. They blended in well with the rock and were heavy enough to make Dick wonder if they were actually stone themselves. He stepped outside, automatically scanning the surrounding areas and flipping through his different sensors to make sure there was no one nearby. Thankfully, they all came back empty. Steph and Damien were already waiting in the middle of the courtyard. Damien was doing a very bad job of hiding his excitement, and Steph wasn't even bothering, bouncing on her toes and radiating a grin so strong, Dick could practically see it through her bouche.
I want dibs,
Steph called as soon as they were in earshot. Tim squawked in outrage, and Damien immediately started protesting.
I think, Jason said loudly, that seeing how you all try to poison me, I should get to go before you guys.
There was a moment of silence. Dick put his hands on his hips. On one hand, that was a low blow. On the other hand, so was a threatening to poison Jason. Steph was immediately cowed, folding her arms across her stomach and looking away. Tim's stance still looked annoyed, but he cringed and backed down. Damien, on the other hand, clenched his hands into fists.
You cannot hold that against us forever,
he complained.
It's been like 3 months. Enough,
Dick stepped in.
I will be using it first.
He raised a hand to cut off their protests.
I'm the oldest, and I also have the best instincts for new weapons, and you guys know it.
His instincts had saved his life many times over, whether it was realizing they were walking into a trap or being able to use new weapons quickly. He knew it was years of training and his senses picking up on things too small for him to notice consciously, but he liked to think that his Dodge and Dot were guiding him and keeping him safe. His proclamation got some grumbling, but eventually his Vadikase nodded. Just in time, too, because the door they had come out of cracked open and Cass slipped out. She must have ran all the way from the other end of the compound to avoid risking Din hearing the door and getting curious. It was excessively cautious. It's not like they weren't allowed outside, but given what they were doing, Dick was grateful for the paranoia. Dick wouldn't admit it, but he held his breath along with his vote as she walked up to them. Cass tilted her head in a grin and pulled Din's laser sword from the back of her belt. Steph cheered, Jason straightened out of his slouch, and Tim gave a silent fist pump. Cass passed the laser sword over to Dick, and he carefully took the hilt, looking it over. This was the closest he'd ever gotten to it, and his Vadikase crowded around to see. The hilt was a compact rectangle, and it was weighty for its size. Dick supposed that made sense, considering it was holding components to make a laser sword. There was a switch in the middle, and Dick used that as a guide for finding the proper grip. He swung the hilt in a few practice slashes, his Vadikase backing away but watching eagerly. Once he was reasonably confident he was holding it correctly, Dick slid his thumb over the switch. Something told Dick to widen his stance and brace. And that was the only reason he didn't fall over when the sword ignited. Not because the sword was heavier than he'd expected, but because it was too light. The blade itself didn't seem to weigh anything. And maybe that made sense for a laser sword, but it still caught him off guard.
Whoa,
he breathed, easing out of his braced stance as he adjusted to the sword's odd balance. The unearthly blade was even more mesmerizing up close, absorbing and repelling light at the same time. Dick moved it idly back and forth, watching it crackle. It felt like Din a little, he realized as he carefully gave the sword a spin. It was an odd thought, and one he couldn't really explain, but it was true all the same, and the familiarity made it easier for him to fall into his stance and start, very, very slowly and carefully, moving through a sword form. Jaster was not having a good week. Well, honestly, he hadn't been having a good few years, but this week in particular had been trying. Vizsla kept slipping through his fingers, using his Hutun La sneak attacks and traps to pick off Jaster's people. They'd lost 3 Ha'ade in the last ambush alone. And now, when they were on the way to fulfill a contract on Korda 6 that would fund their efforts against Kirtzad, they'd had to delay their trip to follow rumors about a new group of Mando'ade that had popped up on a planet a few systems away. Normally, Jaster wouldn't bother, but you could never be too careful with Vizsla. This could be a fledgling Kirtzad outpost, a sign of Vizsla spreading his reach even further. Not on Jaster's watch. The determination to stop Vizsla did nothing to lessen the annoyance, though. And flying over mountains and woodlands searching for any sign of life had gotten old a dozen clicks ago. No one in town could tell them where the outpost might be set up. There were no settlements, no campsites, nothing at all indicated on any maps, and no one could even give them a solid answer about the direction the Mando'ade came from or left toward. Jaster sighed and activated his comm. "Anything?" he asked. He got a bunch of negative replies, culminating in Jango reporting,
"No signs of life, Boot Mandalore."
Jaster's lips quirked at the stumble. It was Jango's first time leading a fire team, and he'd been adjusting admirably.
"We're circling around the mountain," Jango continued. "Scanners aren't. Wait."
Jaster paused, hovering midair and automatically rotating so he was facing the mountain his odd was scouting.
"We've got life forms,"
Jango repeated, sounding excited.
6 of them. Humanoid."
That was the size of a fire team. Kirtzad was beginning to be more likely. "Do not engage," Jaster ordered, motioning to his team and jetting toward the mountain. "Try to remain hidden."
"We came around the mountain far enough away that I don't think they detected our Centrace, and we've taken cover."
"Jate," Jaster praised. "We'll be there in 4 minutes. Ralor, rendezvous with us to provide backup." Going in with 3 times more Verde than the enemy might be overkill, but he didn't know how many more might be hiding nearby. "Montross," he added to his second in command. "Take the rest of the teams back to the ship." The mountain was honestly too far away for a 4-minute flight, but Jaster was not about to leave his odd with only a few of his friends near a camp of potential Kirtzad, so they made it on time. Jango was crouched on a thick branch halfway up a massive tree. Jaster carefully maneuvered so he could land a few branches up without his Centra burning the tree. Sure enough, his scanners picked up on 6 lifeforms clustered together on the side of the mountain. "There must be a ledge," he muttered to himself. The whoosh of Centrace signaled Brelor and her team's arrival, and Jaster activated his comm. "On me," he ordered. "Weapons ready. Don't attack unless I give the signal. We don't know if they're Kirtzad." He leapt from the tree, propelling himself far enough away from the branches that he could safely activate his Centra. His Verde followed him, falling neatly into formation, while Bralor held back to provide reinforcements if this did turn out to be Kirtzad. The team swooped down. There was indeed a large ledge on the mountainside, too smooth and flat to be anything other than sentient made, or at least sentient augmented. The cluster of Mandoade whipped around when they came within hearing range. Potential odd present, Jaster said sharply as he spotted the small figure. It could just be a small species, but they were only wearing a helmet, and the others automatically closed ranks around them, so probably an odd. That made it less likely that this was Kirtzad, but not impossible. Vizsla had no respect for Ade, and would gladly use them as slaves or bait. Silas, one of Django's friends and teammates, gasped.
Mandalore,
he breathed.
The one in red and blue.
Jaster refocused and almost fell out of the sky as he saw the Mando Ad, who had been hidden at the back of the group, holding a black sword.
Is that?
Django gaped. Jaster cut his centra, landing on the ledge a little harder than he normally would. His Verde quickly formed up around him, weapons aimed steadily despite their palpable shock.
Tion Koya,
Jaster demanded as the Mando Ad in red and blue darted to the front of the group, blade replaced with a blaster.
How did you get the Da Carao? Who are we?
The tall Verde and tan Beskar Gam snarled, blaster pointing squarely at Jaster's throat.
Who the Kark are you?
Jaster tilted his head a little. Everyone in Kirtzad knew who he was. It could be a bluff, but as he took a closer look at the beings before him, he realized it wasn't just one odd. He knew how to see past Beskar Gam on many species, and these beings all looked young. He lowered his blaster just a little and heard his Verde do the same behind him.
Are you with Kirtzad?
He asked, watching the one with the Da Carao carefully. The group looked confused. Then a short Verde in green elbowed their way forward, dodging their Vod and Tan's attempt to grab them, though they remained behind the one in the red and blue.
Kirtzad was wiped out,
they said.
Have they come back?
From their height and the pitch of their voice, Jaster estimated they were around Django's age. Jaster narrowed his eyes. He had thought Kirtzad destroyed as well, but that didn't mean the Verde was being honest.
How did you get the Da Carao, if not from Kirtzad and Tor Vizsla?
He asked. There was a moment of silence. The Verdeca glanced back at their companions, then tilted their head at Jaster.
Tor Vizsla,
they said slowly.
Any relation to Pre-Vizsla?
That was an odd question.
Pre is Tor's odd,
Jaster replied warily. Where was this going? Could the Verde somehow know Pre-Vizsla, but not know Kirtzad still existed? The Verde and Tan reached for the Verdeca again, but they danced away, visor locked on Jaster.
Are you Jaster Mareel?
They asked, the strain in their voice audible even through the vocoder.
I am,
Jaster said. The Verdeca squeaked loudly, freezing on the spot. Jaster tensed a little. Would this be the revelation that turned this encounter into a fight? He hoped not. Not with the odd present. The Verde and Tan finally managed to grab the Verdeca's arm and drag them further into the cluster. From the way the rest of the group's heads twitched toward them, Jaster assumed the Verdeca was talking through internal comms. Guys, Tim exclaimed through their internal comms, that's Jaster Karking Mareel.
Who?
Everyone asked simultaneously. Tim flailed a little. There was so much his elite didn't know about their people's history. I think we got this backward, he said. I don't think we're in the future. I think we're in the past.
What?
Jaster Mareel was Mandalore a long time ago, like, he did some rapid counting. 50s BBY. He fought Kirtzad, a group of terrorists and extremists who didn't have any code of honor.
Are you sure it's the same guy?
Steph asked dubiously. Tim couldn't blame her. Being frozen in time in a JT temple while the galaxy moved on outside was one thing, but the temple somehow moving them back?
If one works, I guess,
Jason muttered. None of them had lowered their weapons, except for Tim, who decided talking without a blaster in hand might be more productive. The other Mandoade had lowered theirs slightly, but they were still ready to attack.
I guess,
Steph agreed.
Okay,
Dick breathed, his calm fuzzing a little with static. He never looked away from the Verde, his blaster never twitching.
Here's what we're gonna do. Cass, give Tim the laser sword. Tim, get it to Din. Let him and Bruce know what's going on.
Cass clicked her tongue once in agreement. A second later, Tim felt her hands on the back of his utility belt as she tucked the blade inside the large pouch at the small of his back. Dick had slipped it to her when the Mando Ade had first appeared, and they could only hope no one had noticed. Given that the leader, Jaster Muriel, had only looked at Dick while asking about the sword, their odds seemed good.
Perhaps it is unnecessary for Bruir and Bavuru to know that we took it,
Damien piped up, sounding uneasy. Cass clicked again. Tim was pretty sure the truth would come out, but there was a chance it wouldn't. A very small chance, but still a chance. So he wasn't about to disagree. Ready, he said. Dick straightened a little out of his ready stance and lowered his blaster an inch.
It seems there's been a misunderstanding,
he said smoothly.
We are not with Kirt Zod, and we have no quarrel with you. How about we all lower our weapons?
Muriel was silent for a long moment. Tim tensed as the pause stretched. Finally, though, Muriel nodded.
Together,
he agreed. Everyone slowly lowered their weapons. Dick holstered his blaster first, then Muriel did, then everyone else. Jason was the last to put his weapon away, and he was radiating unhappiness as he did so. Tim better make this fast.
Our Alora are inside,
Dick said, tilting his head toward the door behind them, where they wouldn't have to walk past the Verde.
I would like to send my Vod to fetch them.
The pause was brief this time, and Jaster nodded. Tim glanced at Dick, then eased his way out of the group, holding his hands at shoulder height and backing toward the door. When he was far enough away that backing up would have been strange, he turned and headed for the door, not making any sudden moves and ignoring the paranoia that was screaming that everyone could see the laser sword in his utility belt. No one stopped him, and he gently pulled open the door. As soon as it closed behind him, he fished the laser sword out of his utility belt and broke into a sprint. He knew he wasn't being stealthy, but that wasn't his goal. He raced into Din's room, flung the sword onto Din's bed where his armor was neatly laid out, and burst, well, as much as one could burst when there weren't any doors, into the second smaller room where Din was sitting on the floor, dabbling bubbles on Grogu's nose. Tim felt a bit bad for interrupting. Din's head snapped up, his eyes sharp and body tensing. What? He started, but Tim cut him off.
Bavadu,
he gasped.
We've been found. We were outside running katas, and a bunch of Mando Ade flew up on Centrase.
Din had already jumped to his feet. Tim followed him back into the main room.
They thought we were part of a terrorist group they're fighting. Dick called a ceasefire and sent me to get you and Bu'ir,
he continued, fumbling a little when Din pressed Grogu into his arms. Get him dressed, Din ordered, grabbing his cuirass. Tim dried Grogu off as quickly as he could without giving the Ikad rug burn. Grogu went along willingly, cooing worriedly. They didn't hurt any of you, Din asked as he bent to attach his greaves.
No,
Tim said.
Once we said we weren't part of the terrorist group Kirt Zod, they didn't seem to want to fight.
Good. Din fastened his utility belt and hooked the laser sword onto it.
Bavadu, I think we got the JT magic backward,
Tim said rapidly, pulling Grogu's robe over his head and helping him find the armholes.
I think we're in the past, not the future. I read about Kirt Zod when I was learning about Mandalore, and one of the people who fight them was Mandalore Jaster Muriel. The man outside said his name is Jaster Muriel, and there were some other things that lined up. I think we're in the 50s BBY.
Din grunted in acknowledgement, pulling on his helmet.
Take Grogu and get your Bu'ir,
he said, striding for the door. Tim scooped Grogu up and raced for the other end of the compound.